Blog Talk Radio.
Malcolm used to be on 35th Street,
he wasn't preaching then. He was on 35th Street, 37 King Drive, South Park then, hustling. Shooting little dice. But then he got into Muslims and all that happened. But I want to go back before that because I want to tell you something tonight. How did we get where we at now? You know, blacks in Africa, other blacks sold blacks to white folks. That's how we got over him. Now, here in Chicago, I want to say this. Here in Chicago, we got a white man running for mayor. You got a black man running for mayor. Ain't no problem with white and black running. But when you see black folks go get white folks over black folks. Now, what I mean to you, Jerry, you got an ice house. The white man calls, he got an ice house. I'm black. I won't come to your ice house. I said, Jerry, ice ain't cold. The man called Sweet Ice is more cold. That's that mentality of hate or racism we have in our mind. And we all messed up and crossed up because we won't live the truth, okay? We know some way that I just read where 8,000 Catholic priests raped children in the church, the boys. That covered up. You don't hear about it. You have to look. The boy head got cut off in Taylor, Mississippi. I didn't see it on NBC. I didn't see it on ABC. It was on the internet. It was through the word of mouth that his limb was cut off, his head was cut off. He called the sheriff and said, the white folks were following him. And when they found him the next day, his family found him the next day, his head was cut off. And, you know, the lawyer, Trump, he was there saying what had happened. So I just want you to know that tonight, that we're in a serious racist situation. Yeah, his head was cut off. And it didn't come off on his own. So didn't no bird, no tiger, nothing. This was cut off by racism. Hate of color. I mean, see, some of y'all don't want to grasp that. You know, and I got to agree with Malcolm. I'm going to play Malcolm X later on. We talk about how we so sold into white folks that we can't even do our thing. And Jared, there's a good part of Chicago. What's going on? We had Lightfoot as the first woman black mayor, second woman black mayor, black, first black woman mayor. They weren't satisfied with her. You had eight black aldermen run for mayor. Okay. You had one white man and one Mexican run. Okay. It ended up that was Vallis and Johnson running, black and white. Okay. All of them, we got the gas man. Willie Wilson bought gas all over the country. And I said, well, this man, he really trying to help black folks, trying to help people. Tell you what happened. See, in the Bible, it says the wages of sin is death, the gift of God, eternal life. I want to talk a little bit about civil rights before we get into the Bible. Because some of you, you know, this is what the man told me. Don't talk black folks about politics and Bible. They will kill you about Jesus. They will kill you about that white man. Okay. And I was told that. And most black men, y'all ain't gonna like me, what I've been to say, they want a Cadillac and a white woman, and they satisfied. And it allows them to come off the reservation and feel, well, if I get a white woman, I can be accepted in the white world. And they did it, they ain't accepted. And some black women, if I get a white man and marry a white man, I'll be accepted in the white community. White women ain't accepting black women with white men, and black women ain't doing the same thing. What I'm saying, Samson in the Bible, out of his rage, got his hair cut, lost his strength, lost the power. Okay. Every race, I've talked to every race, if you find out right now what's going on, or it's all right, what do the Bible say? You got to stick with your own. Your melanin. When you kill, you're a melanated man, you're a melanated woman. When you lose that, Deborah, you lose your power. Pearl, when you understand, and I was talking to Pearl, and Pearl, I'm going to preach this Sunday, boogie, woogie, woogie. And I've been doing some research on Gate Mouth Moore was talking about it. I had to research what it means. And I was asking Pearl what it means. And Pearl, it showed me it come out of slavery. It come out of struggle. And we are still in the struggle. This is 2023. We're still in the struggle for racism and white supremacy. And I had last night, I had another preacher on, and he was talking about homosexuality, and how homosexuality play in racism. If I can take the black man and make him a little girl, I ain't got to worry about the white women getting pregnant. Black woman and make her think she a man. Dr. Claude Allen was talking about it. It's so true how they done divided the black community by race, by gender. Now you got young men that wearing their pants down and got a pocketbook on. You got women, young women grabbing the crotch. They ain't got nothing down now. But they go by the tube. They go by the scrap-ons and all of that. It's sin. But the bottom line, the wages of sin is death, the gift of God eternal. That's the bottom line. Now, what's happening in California? God is cleaning the earth up. He's going to do the same thing in Florida, the same thing in the Midwest. Because so much of evil, and Bryce Scott told me she went up to the 38th Native American was killed. They was hung. 38 in South Dakota Indian was hung by this government. So there's a lot of cursing going on. Look up the Dakota 38. There's 38 of them was hung for nothing, okay? So what I'm saying to you is a lot of murdering going on right in our eyes, but we don't see it because we're reaching for something else. That's what we're doing. And we don't want to, I don't want to hear bitches talk about that. You can be so religious and you lose what God got for you. The wages of sin is death, but the gift of God, eternal life. Sometimes you lose what God's going to give you because you are caught up. Now, this is Chicago. Dr. King marched in Chicago. We marched to Marquette Park. We marched to Cicero. We marched all over Chicago for open housing. And some of them that got in Autumn, they didn't march. Some of them that's in Congress, they didn't march. So school teachers marched, and the gangs marched. I want to give honor to Larry Hoover of Gangster Disciples and Jeff Ford of the Black Peace Foundation, who schemed when the mayor told the police department do not protect Dr. King on the west side. And also, I want to give the other group that was there that stood with Dr. King, okay? And these groups stood with Dr. King and protected Dr. King when Dr. King was in Chicago and he was on the west side. And as he was talking to young folks, trying to get them organized, do you know the school system, which is valid to my hero, they kicked black kids out of school, and Dr. King came in with SCLC, could learn how to type, learn how to get back to school. They were putting them out of school. The same board of education happens, okay? I want to thank all the young youth that stood up for Dr. King. The young youth that stood up, okay, for Dr. King. And they was West Side, South Side, North Side, East Side, okay? Now, I wanted to say this here because some of you don't understand Cape Town. You don't understand the Latin Kings. You don't understand the Black Panthers was out there feeding children when children were going to school hungry. The Black Panthers did that, okay? And then when you look on the West Side, you have another group on the West Side that was very strong, okay? And those groups on the West Side was taking care of business and set up business, okay? Pepper Low and them that was in that West Side group on the West Side, okay? And these are some of the groups on the West, on the North Side, doing nothing, was just trying to make it. And the West Side organization right there on Roosevelt and was Roosevelt and Ashland, the West Side organization, Chester Robinson and them was feeding people in. And then you talk about, when you talk about the Latin Kings, they was out there, Latin Kings were out there trying to save kids. The Black Panthers would have a feeding program in every church. And they weren't getting no government funds. They were doing it out of talking to people, getting things together. This is what happened, okay? Now, when you understand all the stuff that happened on the West Side, Good Side, on the North Side, South Side, East Side, in Woodlawn, you had the Black Peace Stone Nation. Inglewood, you had the Disciples. And one of the, I got to tell the story because ain't nobody telling the story. In Inglewood, you had some of the leaders. You had David Boxtel, and you had Larry Hoover of the Disciples and the Gangster Disciples. On the East Side, you had Jeff Ford, and you had Eugene Harrison. The Black Stone and the Black Peace Stone, and they were God in the neighborhood. If the killing that they doing now, wasn't no killing and stick up going on back in them days. We were trying to march to get jobs on the West Side, North Side, marching, asking the unions wouldn't even hire Black folks, wouldn't even put them in the trade, operating engineers, how to be bricklayers. The union wouldn't even let Blacks in. Reverend Al Sampson started, Ida Gary started a union, and they would accept Blacks how to do labor. They would accept Blacks in construction. They did all that. Okay, and this happened on the West Side and South Side of Chicago. Now, the reason I'm telling you all that, after Mark Clark and Fred Hampton was killed, but he went out of hit on all the gang leaders. Oh, y'all ain't praying with me tonight, because ain't nobody told you this. The preachers didn't do nothing with the young youth. It was the young folks, 5,000 every morning, getting up marching on construction sites. Reverend A.I. Dunlap, Reverend Hatcher, Reverend David Coleman, Reverend Alexander, Northside. They was helping young folks, Mama Annie, for feeding young folks, helping them get jobs. We would take a job. If we don't work, don't nobody work. This what happened throughout Chicago. And the Chicago youth were more together than the pastors was, okay? Now, the reason I'm telling you that, because I want to let you know what's going on in Chicago right now. And whatever Chicago did, Mississippi did, Arkansas, New York, all of it did it, okay? So right now, we're in the middle of a fight for the next mayor of Chicago, okay? Now, Blacks is not sticking together. When I tell you blacks ain't sticking together, they're not sticking together. The black Ottomans, now this is what that happened. We got Valdez running and we got Johnson running. They in space. The black Ottomans done join in with the white man, which is all right, that's what they want to do, but it's a sellout. You got Jesse White, they've been knowing man 40 years. I don't care if they've known man 100 years, racism is racism. And then you got Ottomans from the 8th Ward to the 9th Ward and some on the west side to join in with Valley. Now, and then you had one say it ain't a race. It is a racial issue when the white police department is supporting Valley. When you got people in the fire department is supporting the white man over the black man. But it ain't racist. That's what black folks said. See, Dr. King said it, and I'm going to play Dr. King before I go off the air, and Malcolm X, because we haven't changed. We're still selling each other out. I looked at the crowd on Channel 7. This man had more blacks with him than he had white folks. See, white folks going to vote undercover. You got the Bulls. They with Valley. You got the White Sox, they with Valley. Undercover, they giving the money. You got the Bears. They got money, they giving money. But blacks is giving talk. Okay? Black ministers got in on the back of black folks and not helping black folks. The police department, the police union, the fire union, they supporting this man. But we can't get together to support one black man. Because we feel he ain't qualified. They got up. He qualified. Anybody qualified to get up in there. See, this is the kind of stuff that's going on. And that's the stuff that Dr. King was talking about. I'm going to play a little of this. Then I'm going to Malcolm X.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day.
I have to stop that. Dr. King says economic power, political power. And we're talking about the mayor of Chicago can be a black man, but blacks done jumped off the boat. They done went over on the other side because they all looking for a handout. They got the handout. They still begging. Get up. What James Brown said? Get up off of your do-nothing and do something. Begin to support each other. The pastors, the politicians need to support this black man. But they want to do that. They say, well, he ain't qualified. What makes the white boy more qualified than the black boy? Huh? It's your mind.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this. And it didn't cost the nation one to have the great lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
And you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources.
If we begin to vote, we got the resources and technology. I want to thank the vice lord on the west side of the organization. That's why I was saying the vice lord stood with Dr. King shoulder to shoulder when the police, when the vice lord on the west side of Chicago stood with Dr. King in Chicago and said, ain't nobody gonna go. The police come out, you got guns, we got guns, you got guns, and y'all ain't coming in there. It was that kind of problem. That I want to tell you that if it wasn't for the Teen Nation, when they come to kill Mark Clark and Fred Hampton, couldn't kill the vice lord because they were organized. They couldn't kill the leader of the Blackstone Rangers. They were organized. They couldn't kill the leader of the disciples. They were organized. So what they did, they put them in prison for life. Don't tell me politics. And blacks right now have lied to black folks. Vote for them. They're going to do something. And the community is worse. Crime is worse. Okay? Now, the police union didn't do nothing about all this crime. They right now, the police department ain't did nothing about this crime. They tell you, we investigating. They ain't trying to solve nothing. They want whoever in that office black look bad. Okay, that's the kind of stuff that's going on. And we still got Uncle Tom. We still got people loving white folks. They love their mama, their sister, their brother. That's the serious part going on in Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana. We have to come together as black men, as black women, not because of no race thing, but this is a racial fight. And the white folks going to win because black folks can jump off of the black boat, they on the white boat, because they got a handout. They saying, like, he ain't, you know what they said? Show you how dumb they are. He's qualified. He's been there for, okay, been there 50 years. Don't make him no qualified. You, I put on my shoes like you put on your shoes. You put on your dress like any other woman put on your dress. You put on your pants. What makes you so qualified? In your mind, you messed up. And I want to thank for Marcus Garvey. They put him out of the country. They killed Malcolm X. They killed Martin Luther King. Okay? And anybody stand up for black folks, they kill them or put them in prison. And just check out what happened. Now, this is what Malcolm said, and it's so true, it scares me that Malcolm still talking about what's going on in Chicago today, what's happening in Chicago this month with these black folks talking about they black. They talk black, and they go in the back door to get a payout. And that's what happened. That's when our boys is in jail right now in the prison. They killed the black man. Held them down, handcuffed them, and killed them. And what happened in Memphis? Blacks killing blacks because they're trying to get up with white folks. White folks ain't killing white folks. Black folks killing black folks. Police shooting folks down and getting away with it. What happened to George Floyd up in Minnesota? Choked him to death, and people looking. racism is still real. And this is what Malcolm said.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food because he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, "We got a good house here," the house Negro said, "Yeah, we got a good house here." Whenever the master said "we," he said "we." That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick." He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, "Let's run away. Let's escape. Let's separate," that house Negro would look at you and say, "Man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this?" That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, "I'm the only Negro out here." "I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro." And if someone come to you right now and say, "Let's separate," you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. "What you mean separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa." That's what you say. "Why, you left your mind in Africa." On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you all are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master.
When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masters are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts. Our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When he don't want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back, to keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleve pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send him to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man. And at the same time, he just don't fight the white man. He's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a literal education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, a so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him. Make him a celebrity. And then he becomes a spokesman for Negroes and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is The method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders began to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money. And then he accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King and King started attacking Roy and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature begin to attack each other, they begin to lose their control of the Negro masses. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They was talking about, we're going to march on Washington. By the way, right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and bust them upside their head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television and said, this is a moral issue. That's when he said he's going to put out a civil rights bill. And when he mentioned civil rights bill and the Southern crackers started talking about they were going to boycott it or filibuster it, then the Negroes started talking about what? We're going to march on Washington, march on the Senate, march on the White House, march on the Congress and tie it up, bring it to a halt. Don't let the government proceed. They even said they were going to go out to the airport and lay down on the runway and don't let no airplanes land. I'm telling you what they said. That was revolution. That was revolution. That was the black revolution. It was the grassroots out there in the street. Scared the white man to death. Scared the white power structure in Washington, D.C. to death. I was there. When they found out that this black steamroller was going to come down on the Capitol, they called in Wilkins. They called in Randolph. They called in these national Negro leaders that you respect and told them, call it off. Kennedy said, look, y'all letting this thing go too far. And old Tom said, boss, I can't stop it because I didn't start it. I'm telling you what they said. They said, I'm not even in it, much less at the head of it. They said, these Negroes are doing things on their own. They're running ahead of us. And that old shrewd fox, he said, well, if you all aren't in it, I'll put you in it. I'll put you at the head of it. I'll endorse it. I'll welcome it. I'll help it. I'll join it. A matter of hours went by. They had a meeting at the Carlyle Hotel in New York City. The Carlyle Hotel is owned by the Kennedy family. That's the hotel Kennedy spent the night at two nights ago. Belongs to his family. A philanthropic society headed by a white man named Stephen Currier called all the top civil rights leaders together at the Carlyle Hotel and told them that by you all fighting each other, you're destroying the civil rights movement. And since you're fighting over money from white liberals, let us set up what's known as the Council for United Civil Rights Leadership. Let's form this council, and all the civil rights organizations will belong to it. And we'll use it for fundraising purposes. Let me show you how tricky the white man is. And as soon as they got it formed, they elected Whitney Young as the chairman. And who you think became the co-chairman? Stephen Currier, the white man. A millionaire. Powell was talking about it down at the Cobo today. This is what he was talking about. Powell knows it happened. Randolph knows it happened. Wilkins knows it happened. King knows it happened. Every one of that so-called Big Six, they know what happened. Once they formed it, with the white man over it, he promised them and gave them $800,000 to split up between the Big Six and told them that after the march was over, they'd give them $700,000 more. $1.5 million split up between leaders that you've been following, going to jail for, crying crocodile tears for, and they've nothing but Frank James and Jesse James and brothers. Soon as they got the setup organized, the white men made available to them top public relations experts. Opened the news media across the country at their disposal. And then they began to project these Big Six as the leaders of the march. Originally, they weren't even in the march. You was talking this march talk on Hastings Street. Is Hastings Street still here? On Hastings Street. You were talking the march talk on Lenox Avenue and down on Fillmore Street and Central Avenue and 42nd Street and 63rd Street. That's where the march talk was being talked. But the white man put the Big Six ahead of it, made them the march. They became the march. They took it over. And the first move they made after they took it over, they invited Walter Reuther, a white man. They invited a priest, a rabbi, and an old white preacher. Yes, an old white preacher. The same white element that put Kennedy in power, labor, the Catholics, the Jews, and liberal Protestants. same clique that put Kennedy in power joined the March on Washington. It's just like when you got some coffee that's too black, which means it's too strong. What you do? You integrate it with cream. You make it weak. If you pour too much cream in, you won't even know you ever had coffee. It used to be hot, it becomes cool. It used to be strong, it becomes weak. It used to wake you up, now it'll put you to sleep. This is what they did with the March on Washington. They joined it. They didn't integrate it, they infiltrated it. They joined it, became a part of it, took it over. And as they took it over, it lost its militancy. They ceased to be angry. They ceased to be hot. They ceased to be uncompromising. Why, it even ceased to be a march. It became a picnic, a circus. Nothing but a circus with clowns and all. You had one right here in Detroit. I saw it on television with clowns leading it, white clowns and black clowns. I know you don't like what I'm saying, but I'm going to tell you anyway, because I can prove what I'm saying. If you think I'm telling you wrong, you bring me Martin Luther King and A. Philip Randolph and James Farmer and those other three and see if they'll deny it over the microphone. No, it was a sellout. It was a takeover. When James Baldwin came in from Paris, they wouldn't let him talk because they couldn't make him go by the script. Bert Lancaster wrote the speech that Baldwin was supposed to make. They wouldn't let Baldwin get up there because they know Baldwin liable to say anything. They controlled it so tight, they told those Negroes what time to hit town, how to come, where to stop, what sign to carry, what song to sing, what speech they could make and what speech they couldn't make, and then told them to get out of town by sundown. And every one of those towns were out of town by sundown. Now, I know you don't like my saying this, but I can back it up. It was a circus, a performance that beat anything Hollywood could ever do. The performance of the year. Ruther and those other three devils should get a Academy Award for the best actors because they acted like they really loved Negroes and fooled a whole lot of Negroes. And the six Negro leaders should get an award too for the best supporting cast.
But if not,
what I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, born out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music, sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote portraits, sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of a hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And when you do this, you've mastered the length of life. This onward push to the end of self-fulfillment is the end of a person's life. Now, don't stop here, though. You know, a lot of people get no further in life than the length. They develop their inner powers. They do their jobs well.
Do you know they try to live as if nobody else lives in the world but themselves? And they use everybody as mere tools to get to where they're going. They don't love anybody but themselves. And the only kind of love that they really have for other people is utilitarian love. You know, they just love people that they can use. A lot of people never get beyond the first dimension of life. They use other people as mere steps to which or by which they can climb to their goals and their ambitions.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and kiss here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Right now.
Right now.
upon the ocean and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me, Jesus. Oh, things ain't what they used to do. Lost now, radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are alive. Oh, mercy, mercy me, all things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more be you from man? Can't you